Well, good morning. This is Ruth Altamura Roll. I am a licensed professional counselor. I've got my master's in counseling. I am nationally certified, and I'm also a licensed professional counselor. And I have not been here for about a year. My show is called Counselor's Chat. So this is really both exciting and, I'm going to say, a new adventure for me in that all the equipment is the same, but everyone knows that I am equipment challenged. So here I am. It's been quite a year for everyone. I know that some of you out there have had loved ones that have gotten sick, loved ones that have passed away from the virus, and I definitely send my condolences for those of you that are struggling with it or have struggled with it. I am wishing you all health and that you continue to heal. I will say that I have been, knock on wood, thank God, very fortunate. No one in my family, in my immediate family, has gotten sick. And so I'm really blessed with that. Counselor's Chat has been for me a program where I am providing information about mental health. As a mental health care provider, I am now considered, one of the frontline mental health care workers, so that it is imperative that I continue to work, and my practice has remained open. For anyone who is interested in finding out about my practice, you can find me on the web at www.altarolecounselor.com. That's Altarol with two L's, counselor.com. So you can also go on the web under Counselor's Chat on Facebook, and you can find my shows. You can also go on to the 100inchamberradio.com and go into their archives. You might have to look under Wednesdays, because my show for years was Wednesday at noon. So the chamber has a brand new facility. So I don't know if, for those of you that have never been here to this building, it is on Main Street. It is a absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous Victorian home with huge columns. It's probably even a little bit earlier than Victorian. And then it has this long set of offices in the back that the chamber has converted into a business center and added this lovely radio station. So we've got nice big windows, and it smells like fresh paint, new carpet. It's really, really, even through the mask. And so that is really lovely. And we've gone through many different homes, I'm going to say. And this is probably going to be the most permanent one. When I started with the radio, probably almost 10 years ago, I really don't know. We were above the CenturyLink building, and then we moved here, but we kind of shifted around different rooms as they were getting this particular facility here built and ready to go. So it has been quite a year for the country in general. And I really contemplated in terms of my topic. And it was really a huge struggle for me. I could talk about grief and loss, which plays a huge role in everyone's lives this year. Grief is the change in any kind of pattern, really. You know, not going to work, working from home, getting sick, not seeing family, our holidays, our birthdays, you know, wearing face masks, standing in line, social distancing, not being able to hug, all of those things cause a consequence of grief. Long-term grief can lead to depression. We're also living in a time where we are told to be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. And so now that is also causing high levels of anxiety. And when COVID first hit, my practice was doing well and went from, well, I'll say this, I pretty much lost about 2/3 of my clients right off. Saying, you know, we have this 2 weeks and we're supposed to social distance for 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Well, that didn't really happen, as we all know. We're still in that 2 week period of flattening the curve, I guess. And the thing is that my clients started to contact me and I offered telecounseling or virtual counseling. So that means if someone is interested in seeking out counseling, I use the Zoom platform, and I do have a number of clients that do that. In addition, I do see clients in my office, and my office is large enough that it is definitely social distanced. So, and it works where you have it, and I have an indoor, I have an outdoor, I have a lot of hand sanitizer, and I have a lot of I have a spray. I'm not sure what to call it. You know, a sanitizing spray. I spray the doors. I spray the furniture, wherever anyone might touch. Not just the door handles. I mean the doors. You know, when you open the door and then you. A lot of times people don't keep holding the handle. So that I sanitize pens, I sanitize. And even now that the colder months are here, I do keep a window open and I have a space heater to provide a little additional heat into the room. But it has been safe. I have had a few clients that have tested positive. When they've been exposed, they do virtual. And so, you know, if I have someone that has tested positive, I'm going to say, I'm again, knock on wood, and thank God that I have not had any connection with anyone where I could say, oh, I've been in contact with someone who tested positive. I haven't had that. And I think part of it is because which is really hasn't changed much for me in that, I'm either at home or at my office. I visit my mom, and right now they are again on lockdown. My mom just turned 90 this year. And I'm considered an essential caregiver, and so I get a COVID test. And so I've tested negative every time that I've gone to see her. So there's that aspect. And other than going to the grocery store, very little socializing, really. My husband, he works for the VA, but he goes into, he's an essential caregiver also. He goes into his office and comes home. He doesn't really associate with anyone initially. I mean, his job is supposed to be to go out in the public and inform veterans of the services that are being offered through the VA counseling centers. But that has actually been put on hold. And so my life really in some ways, and again, I thank God for that, hasn't changed all that much. And my positively and sadly at the same time, my counseling practice has increased. I think we just had lights that went out. I'm not sure why that is. We'll have to take care of that at some point. Anyway, so again, I'm Ruth Altamira Roll. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I have been a counselor for 35 years. I have been in private practice for 21 years. And I have been doing counselor's chat for about 10 years now. And the sole purpose really is to provide education to the public. I'm not here to counsel anyone. I'm here to educate about good mental health. And like I said, I really was unclear in terms of my topic for today. As some of you may know, I have always been a little challenged. And of course, this morning, coming in was no different. Chris Fallon, the director of the chamber, you know, helped me sign on. And of course, you know, I say I have some kind of electromagnetic thing going on that. And then, of course, I just got a new iPad. So I spent all day yesterday updating my passwords and all of that. So talk about grief. This is good grief, right? So I again, really struggled with what to talk about. I could talk about anxiety. I could talk about depression. But I really thought, you know, the United States in general, we're a big family. You know, human beings, we really are not made to be lone wolves. We are not made to isolate. That is not in our human character. It's not in our DNA. It really is imperative as humans that we interact with other people. So many of you have watched the movie Castaway. It is such a fantastic movie. If you have not seen it, I mean, it's moving into classics, I guess. But if you haven't seen it, I really suggest that you see it. So the main character is in a plane accident. He is a like a UPS, or I can't remember the name of the company. It's one we all know. Not Amazon. Amazon was not around yet. But he, you know, delivering packages, parcel post, one of those. Anyway, he's in a plane accident. He's the only survivor, and he ends up on an island, a deserted island. It's just him. And he struggles with being alone. And one of the saving graces that he has is, out of anger and frustration and sorrow and fear and all kinds of things, he had a volleyball, and his hand was bloody, and he hit the ball, and it looked like a face. And all of a sudden, he had a companion, and that companion he named Wilson. And I'm not going to give you the ending of the story, but I do suggest if you haven't seen it, watch it. It is a really good, it gives you a really good indication how important having another human being in our life is to us as human beings. Like, it's something that we need. Another face is a mirror for us. And that is really important because it lets us know that we are here, that mirror. Just looking into a mirror is not sufficient. But having another human being be our mirror works really well. With that being said, because we are family-oriented, because we are social creatures, it is why we do live in families. It is why oftentimes we live in neighborhoods, in towns, in cities, in countries. And our country is really struggling right now. And we need to remember that as a country, we are a family. We are a family in terms of we are members of and citizens of the United States of America. And we are citizens of the world. Now, the funny thing about families is that so often, and I'm going to say for the most part, families can be dysfunctional. The more dysfunctional the family, the greater the fallout from being in a dysfunctional family. And families I'm not going to even use the word normal. Even with my clients, I say let's not use the word normal. Let's use the word healthy. Healthy families have two parents. Generally speaking, a mother figure and a father figure. A dysfunctional family does not have that. Now, there might be two parents, but one parent may be compromised through addiction, disease, mental health issues, absenteeism, separation, being in jail, being in the military, working nights, working days, both parents working. There's, you know, we live in a society where typically both parents are working. It really actually causes some family dysfunction. We may have different types of abuse within dysfunctional families. And I'm going to say, I want you not to only think of the family that you have, you know, within your house, but think of it also, sort of think of the broader picture of the family of the United States. Physical abuse happens in dysfunctional families. Well, we've seen that this year. We've seen it through riots in many different cities, through what happened just at the Capitol. That's physical. We've seen emotional abuse. I don't know. It feels like, you know, we're getting bantered back and forth with the COVID virus and be afraid, depression, all of those things that I mentioned earlier. Sexual abuse. Is there sexual abuse? There is sexual abuse. We hear about sex trafficking and all kinds of things like that. And sexual abuse, gender identification, and all of those kinds of things. They do have some elements of sexual abuse to them. In other words, not saying, well, I can't identify myself as female. There is some sexual abuse in that everyone is sort of binary, and therefore I lose my identity. Physical neglect. Well, we do have neglect, physical neglect that goes on in families, you know, not getting fed, not getting bathed, sleep deprivation. We call them food deserts in this country. Food lines have just expanded. People not being able to go to work. I mean, these are all parts of physical neglect. Businesses shutting down. Emotional neglect. And so that's happening. It doesn't matter what you feel. You just got to do what the government tells you to do. And so there's that aspect. And the same thing happens within dysfunctional families. You know, you don't get to feel what you feel. Who told you could be angry? Who told you that you know, I'll give you something to cry about? That kind of thing. Witnessing domestic violence is dysfunctional. Oh my gosh. Boy, this year. It's the summer of violence, the burnings and the rioting in our cities, the smashing of windows, the assault on police and the assault on the citizen, and the riots in Washington, D.C. and storming the Capitol and all of those things. For those of us that are not participating in that, we are watching it on TV. We are witnessing violence. And of course, at home, witnessing domestic violence. There's an increase of children not going to school. Okay, so I'm going to say that's emotional abuse right there. And physical abuse. It is intellectual abuse. But children are witnessing parents who would go to work. Now they're stuck under the same roof. And there is a heightened possibility of watching your parents become violent with each other and become violent with you as a child. A parent or close family member who is an alcoholic or addict. This definitely leads to addiction. So one of the first things that happened in our society is you can't go to work, you can't go to church, you can't go to the stores, but you can go to the liquor store. That is a sign of dysfunction. And in an alcoholic family, when the focus is on the thing that you're addicted to, and I'm going to say it's not just alcohol, and it's also drugs, can be prescription drugs. The state of New Jersey is making marijuana legal. Not that they ever ask therapists about that. You know, you could still gamble, sex addiction, shopping. Oh my gosh, you know, Jeff Bezos has been making money hand over fist because people are home and they're shopping because they don't have anything else to do. Become addicted to shopping, addicted to gaming, addicted to watching movies and videos, and addicted to Facebook, and addicted to Twitter, and addicted to Snapchat, and all these things are addictive in nature. And so when you have someone who becomes involved in their addiction, and so, you know, addiction is an interesting thing. You know, we tend to think of the alcoholic or the addict. But when other aspects of your world begin to fall to the wayside, so when I hear kids are up to 4 or 5 in the morning playing video games rather than sleeping, like, oh yeah, it's been 4 or 5 days since I've taken a shower. You know, I'm just sitting here playing my video games. That's addictive. Not brushing your teeth, not taking a shower, eating junk food just because it's there and then you could shovel it in. Having worked in the drug and alcohol field for a number of years, listening to cocaine addicts say, oh yeah, I would just sit there and I would just soil my pants and I just keep going. I wouldn't stop for anything. 4 or 5 days. No sleep, just use. Stories of, you know, yeah, I'm using cocaine, the person next to me gets a heart attack. You know, we drag them out the back, just leave the body out there, go back and use. It could be, you know, basically doing the same thing with video games. Our kids are not sleeping. Our kids are staying up all hours of the night playing these games. It's addictive behavior. It actually triggers the same areas in the brain as cocaine. When you have a parent or close family member who is mentally ill, and so that means someone who is depressed, someone who has anxiety, someone who has trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, someone who may have schizophrenia, a personality disorder, all of these things. And so now we're living in this time where, our country has been thrown into this pandemic where we have a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety. You know, I get the calls for clients looking for counseling for anxiety. It's just way, way off the charts. And that's so mentally ill. And this is, of course, this prolonged exposure to the anxiety is causing post-traumatic stress. So what do I mean by that? So any trauma, and this is traumatic, it's traumatic because it's causing anxiety. Any trauma in the first 3 months or so is called acute trauma. So it's acute. It's happening currently. I'm having consequences to it. But after 3 months, it becomes post-acute. Okay. So it's after the trauma. Well, we're still actually in the trauma. We have been in trauma now for a year almost. At the end of January, it'll be a year that President Trump said no more flights from China. Here we are. It's a year. And we have so many people in our society struggling with depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress, grief and loss. No ways of expressing that. Then we have parents who are separated and or divorced. That causes family dysfunction. And so if we want to look at our society as a whole, we have the Republicans and the Democrats who are actively fighting parents. Look at that way. Moving closer and closer to divorce. It's frightening. It's scary. And we're observing it. And then, of course, as I mentioned, a close family member being incarcerated. And I'm going to say even, you know, they didn't, it's on my list here, it's not indicated. But, you know, when you've got a family member that is deployed for a year or so, it's similar. So dysfunctional families, function. They just function dysfunctionally. So if I get a flat tire, I could put the donut on. It's not this quite the same size. It says I could travel maybe 50 miles on it. And it's been 135 miles. I'm still driving on my donut because I haven't had time to go get a new tire. And it's definitely beginning to affect my car. My wheels are out of line. Something shimming, you know, one of my wheels, whatever, you know. It just happens. If something is not functioning properly, I'll use this example. So some people have electric stoves. And in the old days, the electric stoves had coils, and they still do. If you have a glass top, it's still a coil. And sometimes some of the rings of the coil no longer heat up. You could still cook on it, but just not as well. It doesn't function quite as well. If you have a clog, the water can still be draining in your sink, but it's draining pretty slowly. It hasn't stopped, but it's not functioning properly. There's something not right. Your clothes are not balanced in your washing machine, and the thing's going bang, bang, bang because it's not balanced. It's out of balance. It's functioning, but it's functioning in a dysfunctional way. One of the ways that human beings, we have survive and we have thrive. In a functional, healthy, functional family, our children, they thrive. So what do I mean by thrive? They feel safe. They grow. They're curious. Our children do well in school. They are creative, playful, intuitive, gentle, loving, open-minded. This happens because they're living in a functional family where they feel safe. Their needs are being met, and they can grow. They can grow, they can expand, they can, and they will mature into healthy, thriving adults. And I don't mean thriving in terms of, oh wow, I'm making a lot of money kind of thriving. I'm meaning becoming mature. And what do I mean by mature? I mean they have good self-esteem. I mean they know the difference between wants and needs. I mean they have a good sense of their boundaries and their limits. I mean they're able to advocate for themselves in healthy ways. And I mean that they're able to regulate their emotions in a healthy way. So that's what mature looks like. Good self-esteem, difference between wants and needs, know what they are, know and understand boundaries and limits, know and understand how to advocate for themselves in healthy ways. This is about being mature. And also to be able to regulate emotion. When we can do that, we have become able to thrive, grow, expand, create. When we are in survival mode, and we end up in survival mode because we don't feel safe, I'm just barely surviving, we end up with a lot of fear. And what does fear do? Fear will cause three basic things: fight, flight, or freeze. Fight, I'm going to argue. Flight, I'm going to run away. Freeze, I'm going to play dead. I'm just going to freeze. When I am in survival mode and we or our family or our country goes into survival mode, we do not grow, we do not expand, we do not create, we shrink. We freeze, we fight. Here we are, stay at home, freeze. Rioting, fight. Flight, we're not there yet. We don't have people leaving the country in droves. We still have people wanting to come here. But I think people are thinking about where can I go? If America collapses, where can I go? Wait, let me change that. So here in New Jersey, we are inundated by people from New York looking to buy houses. They are fleeing the cities. Okay? There's the flight. So the way dysfunctional families operate, instead of helping their children feel safe so they grow and expand and thrive and create, become mature, healthy adults, what ends up happening is they go into survival mode. It's not uncharacteristic of someone who grows up in a dysfunctional family to become addicted themselves, have bad relationships, have poor self-esteem, have sort of an outlook on life where they're angry, they're mistrusting, the very foundations that we have. So I mean, think about this. When we have 50% of our families divorced, and if divorce and separation contributes to dysfunctional families, and here's the other thing, second marriages, 60% end in divorce. Many would say, why would that be? Well, because we are attracted to the same person. So we go for what is familiar, family. I'm attracted to the same type of person. I couldn't get my first alcoholic husband to stop drinking, so I married another alcoholic. Maybe I could get him to stop drinking. I'm a codependent person. And so I do that, and I keep looking for people to fix. Well, the first marriage didn't work. The second marriage didn't work. I've got kids that are a mess. How do you think that affects our society as a whole? So we're not talking just about one family. This is a systemic problem. Dysfunctional families tend to be unpredictable, chaotic, and sometimes frightening for children. And so here we are. We are living in a time that's unpredictable, chaotic, and frightening. I don't like saying that government is the parent. Would you say, you know, the parent company? We've got going on right now social media that is saying there are certain, well, they said the president could no longer be on Twitter, and so they've said to him, you can't talk. And I know that there's some other social media like Parler and some others where they've done the same thing, and people basically, conservatives, they say you can't talk. So the parent is saying don't talk. What it does is it creates chaos, fear, unpredictability. When children feel safe, they can count on their caregivers to consistently meet their physical needs. Food, shelter, protection from physical abuse or harm, emotional needs, noticing their feelings, comforting them when they're distressed. Children also need structure. That's also our society as a whole. Like, I really want you to see that what is going on in our country is also a reflection of dysfunctional family. And if your own family is doing this dysfunction, your children are going to have the anxiety, the depression, the dysfunction, the immaturity, because that is sort of the thing, immaturity. I mean, you got to stand back a little bit and look and go, oh gosh, our politicians are oftentimes acting awfully immature. And I'm not saying one party or the other, just in general. Dysfunctional families, adults tend to be so preoccupied with their own problems and pain that they don't give their children what they need. I don't know. So my understanding is Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio have been arguing over the vaccine, who gets it, when they get it, how it's distributed, what is the age cutoff, all kinds of stuff. That the vaccine is actually spoiling in New York State. People are not getting what they need. The parents are arguing. As a result, children feel highly stressed, anxious, and unloved, and or unlovable. Dysfunctional families live by three basic rules. And those rules are don't talk, don't trust, and don't feel. So if I'm growing up in a dysfunctional family, my dad's an alcoholic, he beats my mom. My mom is a heroin addict, lying on the couch, we're not getting fed, the house is a mess. My parents are separated, divorced. Nobody really realizes that I'm being neglected. But I better not say anything to anybody. I don't tell anybody. Who am I going to tell? Tell my dad? He doesn't care. Tell my mom? She doesn't care. Definitely not going to tell my teachers. I'm not going to go tell the principal. My family no longer has any kind of involvement in any kind of church, synagogue, temple, or any kind of other religious, you know, part of it is because it's been closed down. Part of it is because the family dysfunction is just taken over. And so there isn't even anything like that. I don't belong to Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, whatever scouting, whatever we call them these days. I'm sorry, I don't necessarily keep up with all of the changes in words that we use, what is okay and not okay, because it's the don't talk rule. Don't talk. This, yes, I understand this. I do. I understand this. And I don't understand this. I'm referring to the mask. It is, it's interesting, a sacrament, church sacrament, this is what I learned, a sacrament is an outward and visual sign of an inward and spiritual grace. That is the definition of a church's sacrament. So baptism is an outward and visible sign, okay, get sprinkled with water, of an inward and spiritual grace, and now I have been saved, okay, spiritually saved. I am now a Christian. That's the outward sign of the inside change. The mask is the same thing. It is an outward and visible sign of an inward and invisible message. Don't talk. It really is. It muffles things. I'm here. I've got, and I understand it. I'm not going to say at all that this should not be, because I don't want to get sick, and I don't want someone to get sick if I had been exposed. So the mic has a covering. I've got a covering. We've got Lysol wipes. We've got all of those things. I am the queen of hand sanitizing. To the point where my husband, like, bust you, really? I'm like, yeah. I want to make sure that I stay healthy. It's imperative that I stay healthy. I have a mother that I have to look after, and I have clients that I need to be available for. And for me to get sick is not a good thing. So, yes, I understand it, and I practice it. I social distance. If you see me, I'm wearing my face mask. I used hand sanitizer before I came in. I will use hand sanitizer before I leave. Generally speaking, my hands are wet and dripping with hand sanitizer as I open and close the door that is not within my own house. But the don't talk rule can be extremely confusing. We sense there's something wrong, but no one acknowledges it. Children then might say, well, maybe there really isn't a problem. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I don't really know what I know. Maybe I'm going to blame something or someone. Maybe I feel like I get blamed. I'm going to blame myself. Maybe I'm not seeing it right. Maybe this is what is normal. I hear people say that all the time. Well, I don't know. I mean, it was normal in my family. That's what we did in my family. Isn't that normal? Well, maybe. But it's not healthy. Gosh, I don't know. If I live in a society that says, I don't know, the year is 1132 and we take a bath once a year. That's normal. Is it healthy? No. The don't talk rule ensures that no one acknowledges the real problem. We don't talk. We muzzle. We say words you cannot use. That's the political correct. You know, I know you, a lot of people may be sitting there saying, I want to turn her off. I don't agree with her. As a therapist, I say there is no such thing as political correctness in my office. If you have issues with gender. You need to come and talk to me about it in my office. If you have issues around prejudice, you need to be able to come in and talk about it in my office. Let's talk about why that is an issue for you. If you have an issue with your whiteness, if you have an issue with your blackness, if you have an issue with someone else's whiteness or someone else's blackness or whatever it is, you need to talk about it. Second rule, don't trust. Children depend on their parents and caregivers to keep them safe. In dysfunctional families, I can't trust that. As a matter of fact, my parent, who's supposed to be keeping me safe, is beating up my mom. Or my mom is beating up my older brother. Or my older brother is beating me up. Or I'm beating up my younger brother. Nobody is safe. We don't have food. We don't have heat. We don't have all kinds of things. It doesn't feel safe. I cannot trust. I have no sense of security. I move to that area of thriving. I am not going to survive if I don't feel safe. If I can't trust, I will not feel safe. Can anyone say that we feel safe? I don't feel safe going to a store. I don't feel safe going to a restaurant. I don't feel safe having family members over. I don't feel safe. Don't feel safe. It causes inconsistency and undependability. There are broken promises. There are responsibilities that are not being fulfilled. It's a dangerous situation for children. It's a dangerous situation for our country. As a result, children learn that they can't trust others, even their parents, to meet their needs and keep them safe. The most fundamental form of trust for a child. Here we are, it's a country. And so the reality is that we are a dysfunctional country being led by dysfunctional people within dysfunctional families, dysfunctional societies. Home life is dysfunctional, not going to school, it's just dysfunctional all over the place. And then lastly, the third rule is don't feel. Repressed, painful, and confused emotions. It's a coping strategy. So what do? We oftentimes distract ourselves. So we may even witness our parents numbing themselves with alcohol, drugs, TV, food, pornography, technology. I don't know. No one listens to how I feel. And watching my parents argue, and I'm sitting there being scared, and I'm told, go to bed. And I go, I'm scared. What are you scared about? Well, you guys are fighting. No, we're not. Don't trust what I see. I can't feel afraid. I can't say anything to anybody about it. Because I just said you're fighting, and they told me, no, we're not fighting. I don't know. What do I do with all of that? Especially as a child, what do I do with all of that? Well, maybe I go into my own rage. Maybe I shut down. It goes to that feeling of being neglected and ignored. And worst, it can lead to violence, blame, and shame. Violence, blame, and shame. So don't feel leads to violence, blame, and shame. So children also learn to repress their feelings, numb themselves, and to distract themselves from the pain. I think it's so important to be able to see what is going on in this country. Do not, and I repeat, do not trust any news network. Do your own research. Recognize that it is important for you to start talking about what is real. Don't trust what they say. Verify. Verify. Get in touch with your own feelings. Journal. Find someone that's safe to talk to. Let people know how you really feel. Again, being mature. Good self-esteem. I know who I am. I feel strong in who I am. I know what I like. I know what I don't like. I understand that I have good qualities. I know some of my shortcomings. I work on improving those shortcomings. I work on strengthening the things that I have that are positive. I know my wants and needs. There's a difference between a want and a need. I need food. I might want chocolate cake. What I really need might be a salad and some good protein rather than a piece of chocolate cake. So knowing the difference between want and need. Boundaries and limits. Now, for those of you that have listened to me for years, I go over boundaries and limits all the time. Maybe because boundaries and limits was such an important thing in my own life. To be able to learn how to thrive, I needed to understand my boundaries and my limits. I use this example of a piece of property. I have a neighbor. We have a fence. The fence is on the boundary line. When I go up to the fence to talk to my neighbor, I have gone to the limit of my boundary, of my property. When my neighbor crosses into my backyard without asking permission, they've crossed my boundary. Or if I go into their yard without asking permission, I have crossed their boundary. Being able to advocate for yourself. So what I mean by that is about being assertive, not being aggressive, not being a passive, and not being passive aggressive. It's about being assertive, using I statements. I feel, I need, I see, I have limits, I feel violated when, okay, I'm in pain, I need help. Being responsible for my wants, my needs, my boundaries, my limits, and being able to speak up and advocate for myself. Those things are really important. And the last thing I had said earlier was emotional regulation. What do I mean by that? We don't end up in riots. We end up fighting. We're able to express our needs in healthy, constructive ways. I don't get in your face and scream. You don't get in my face and scream. So we can replace these things and move towards healing within our families and within our society. We have to talk about our feelings and our experiences, not get shut down. I need to hear your perspective. I may not agree with your perspective. I say this to my clients all the time. In my office, I have two doors and two windows. Where I sit, I see the two windows. Where they sit, they see the two doors. My perspective is two windows. Their perspective is two doors. If I say, no, this room only has two windows, and they say, no, this room only has two doors, and I'm not willing to see the other perspective, I don't get the full picture. I need both sides of the perspective. I need to hear what the other person says, and the other person needs to hear what I'm saying so that we have the full picture. The way we break down shame and loneliness and isolation is to build connection. Well, that's really hard to do right now. Even though we have things like Zoom and whatnot where we can do that, it's still not the same. But it's about finding people that we can say are trustworthy, who acknowledge our feelings, who are willing to listen and want to hear. I want to hear your experience. I want to hear your feelings. Again, setting appropriate boundaries to trust others, especially when people have let you down in the past. So one of the things that we are told is that we're supposed to love everyone, and this is true. And I'm saying from a Christian perspective, but that doesn't mean that we have to accept everyone into our lives, that it's important to have appropriate boundaries. And I use this example all the time. So if I invite someone over for lunch and they break my china and steal my jewelry, there may be consequences to that, one of which they're probably not going to get invited over again. They may even go to jail for that. But that doesn't mean I can't be kind or patient. It means that, you know, there are consequences to our behavior. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to love you, but I can love you from a distance. I need to be able to trust my own feelings, trust my own judgments. That's how I set up healthy boundaries. And then, about our feelings. We are allowed to have our feelings. We have to practice our feelings. I have to acknowledge my feelings. It doesn't mean I take action on them. I may say, you know what? I am really angry. I am so angry right now. That doesn't mean that I storm the Capitol. And it doesn't mean that I burn down a city. And it doesn't mean that I punch my husband. And it doesn't mean that I slap my kid around or kick my dog. So I am at the end of time for today. I hope my show today was useful. I want people to recognize that there's a lot of dysfunction going on in our country and in our homes. And where do we start to fix it? We start fixing it at home. Look to yourself. Look to your own family. I'm Ruth Altamira Roll. I'm a licensed professional counselor. And again, if you're interested in finding out more about me, you can find me on the web at www.altarollcounselor.com. That's Altarole with two L's, counselor.com. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed coming back, and I wish everyone good mental health.